Welcome, everyone, to the Runaways Rundown podcast by Fantastic Geek, the official, unofficial voice of the Marvel Cinematic Community. My name is Matt, and joining me, as always, is Pete. Hello, Pete.
Fistagons, do not fail me now. The Runaways Rundown podcast by Fantastic Geek for episode 301, Smoke and Mirrors, is brought to you by the incredible, edible, viscous avian embryo.
Pete, so glad to be back talking Runaways. You know, maybe this isn't always my most favorite show, but watching this episode today on premiere day, it was like, welcome back, old friends. Give me your updates, and I'm excited to start this season.
Perish the thought, Matt, that this isn't your favorite Marvel show, but why don't you explain to us our schedule coming up?
Yes, Pete, with all the different things going on that we're podcasting this month, we're definitely doing multiple Runaways a week. Might be a little bit different just in terms of the exact days. So just to take everybody through it, we have this episode today, Friday the 13th. Runaways 302 will be Sunday the 15th, 303 the next day, December 16th. And then from there, I would recommend checking fantasticgeek.com. I also should have a link in the podcast description here that you could, that'll take you to fantasticgeek.com so that you can follow the schedule. But like I said, multiple episodes a week, and looking to have this season done right around New Year's Day.
Some Mandalorian, some Rise of Skywalker, peppered in and around, maybe even a short trek or two. But Matt, what do you say we get to that Runaways recap? A guilt-wrapped Chase awakens in the hostel and finds a seriously wounded Alex, who tells him to save the others. Nico, Carolina, and Molly are down as well, and Pride is placing Gert in an alien pod to drain her. He fights them off despite temporary Fistagon issues. We've all been there. And saves Gert. Weighty lines, and suddenly Janet Stein, superstar, is on the cover of a magazine and her husband is making crepes. Then it's Chase walking Carolina down the aisle to Nico. But these aren't flash forwards. They're algorithm prisons. After the title card, Nico walks through a field as her voice echoes calling for Carolina. She sees AWOL, who she sent there, and who tells her he and his guys are alive. He turns into crows which swirl and become Morgan Le Fay. Nico needs her help and wakes in the hostel. Zavin is unable to locate Carolina, meaning there must be a physical barrier. Nico explains to them she had a dream about Carolina. Alex and the group watch a Pride news conference. Zavin identifies Victor as the magistrate, who explains there was a gas leak at their headquarters and that Robert Minoru is in intensive care. Mrs. Minoru is the daughter of the magistrate, and Zavin explains that the aliens take over a host until the host is gone. The magistrate's wife makes a plea to the fourth member, the son, the darkest and most powerful of them all. Pride also downplays the racially motivated charges against the Wilders. The kids hatch a plan to send two teams to recon. Really pregnant Leslie Dean is relegated to team bed rest. Bert is Dale's prisoner, as is old Lace, who is upset. That is Dale's end game. A flaky magistrate serves viscous avian embryos to his wife and daughter. He says he has time before absorbing more life force, but the others want to cut into one of the specimens soon. Zavin reveals strong emotions can cause a host to resurface. It's kill or be killed. The Wilders meet with their lawyer, who explains the seriousness of the charges. Catherine tells Londell to get bail ready because she's got this. Janet realizes she's in the algorithm. She locates the door but cannot leave. She makes contact with Chase. Leslie needs medical attention with her pregnancy. Zavin has a heart-to-heart with Molly. The momistrate goes into Carolina's algorithm, ascertains she's the magistrate's half-alien, half-human daughter, and begins to delete her world. Outside, Alex and Nico use the X-ray goggles to see the three prisoners in tubes and two aliens with them. Dale explains Gert has more abilities with old Lace and helps her drive the dinosaur, but she runs into a tree and passes out. Jeffrey Wilder is released from custody after Catherine has confessed to the murder of Darius Davis. Back at the hostel, after recon, the group learns about the inhibitor pods, which they will need to use. They also see security footage of Nico fighting her parents and her strange new abilities. The magistrate continues to work on the tech to return home. His wife worries he's been there too long and grown too attached to humans. Gert calls them as their son. Alex talks to Nico and reassures her that she's not an alien, and they break into the Stein's home. He goes into Janet's algorithm, and she reveals the system is being strained. He needs to use the abstract to free them. He also communicates with Chase. The aliens come to get Gert, who reveals herself to be Zavin and runs away from them. Molly fights Stacy and eventually is able to shake her from the hold of the Momistrate. Nico enters Carolina's algorithm before Alex has to get her to leave. They hide from the aliens. A nurse checks out Leslie's pregnancy before she grows worried with what she sees and goes to find a doctor. Leslie uses the ultrasound to see glowing eyes.
Pete, villains aplenty in this episode, in this return of Runaways. Let's start by talking about the magistrate.
You know, the construction to have the parents partially become the hosts for the other aliens allows them to keep actors on and then play them differently. So I think it's a really elegant solution to a complicated problem.
Oh, yeah, it's a ton of fun, particularly when we expand things to the Istrate family. I'm talking Momistrate. I'm talking Sissistrate. Particularly bemused am I by Brittany Ishibashi's performance here, going from the reserved and kind of, you know, most mama bear of the mama bears to, you know, kind of the, you know, teenage-esque Sissistrate alien. It's just a ton of fun.
I believe you're looking for vapid stereotype of a teenager in 2019.
There is a little bit like, but wait, they're a teenager, but they're these, you know, thousand-year-old creatures or whatever. But, you know, there's when a comic book show slash movie has the right intermix formula, you can know when you're having silly fun because you're just having silly comic book fun. And that's what's going on here. I mean, same thing with the mom, you know, use your communication device to communicate with me. How do I initiate communication? Like, it's a bit of silliness. And just when it's like, all right, I'm sick of here of her talking with strange alien words, that's when they kind of move on from it. It really shows that the series has a great sense of, you know, again, when to have fun, when to move the plot along.
And we know that the original personalities can surface from time to time, so you can still get that. You get more bang for your buck. With Dale, we have somebody who, again, you know, with the parents, it's always been this twofold battle of they are the adult figures at the same time they are evil. And again, he maintains that mix, but now keeping his daughter as a captive.
Oh, yeah. And I think that out of all the parent characters, I think you and I both were the most sympathetic to the York's parents through the first two seasons. And I think that it's a smart continuation of that through line to have Kevin Weissman playing a sympathetic villain and somebody whose motives we really, really understand.
And then we have Morgan Le Fay, who gets introduced. We've not been formally name checked yet, because that's not how good TV works. Yes, Nico, I am Morgan Le Fay, and I am a sorceress. But to have her show up to start this intrigue in terms of what this ultimately means for the storyline, okay, it's not alien influence. We know that now. To shove us off on this final season.
And I think it's the right introduction of her here, where there's mystery, you know, to whatever degree you know or don't know about the magic end of it. There's enough plot left over from season two to propel much of this episode as we kind of set things up for season three proper, and to have her appear in kind of triumphant, noteworthy fashion, but still a ton of mystery. It suggests to me that we're in for a very well-constructed season, neither rushing too early into her presence or, you know, much love to Daredevil, hashtag save Daredevil, hashtag I read on the blog that they're saving it shortly or not. But, you know, to me, the Kingpin reveal was always held a bit long. I feel like we're going to get that name-check Morgan Le Fay and better understanding of her, you know, in the next two episodes. But Pete, let's shift gears now to some theories. Let's start with the very end of the episode. Is the demon ? Baby, is that brother, the brother straight?
I think it's too low-hanging fruit for it to be that. I have that marked as the fifth alien, the hybrid baby. Clearly, the Mama Straight's feelings towards Carolina indicate there is that human connection, that human half with those other children that the magistrate has fathered. That, I mean, it feels like V, Matt. It feels like the old TV miniseries and very short series from the 1980s that they rebooted last decade as a disaster. You know, the hybrids could be used against the actual aliens.
I have to wonder how long it'll be before, you know, our runaways are all put back together, particularly with the, you know, kind of with the fractured nature. You know, some of them are in these imagined worlds, and, you know, Chase thinks he's helping his compatriots when in fact he's not, and things of that sort. It's a really, really fun episode. I have to wonder if it is my favorite episode. But along the way, you know, we do have the group split up. I feel like with Marvel TV, it's difficult sometimes to tell what the pacing would be. But again, kind of somewhere in that episode three range is when it's going to be, and we're back together so that we can have them for a certain period of time.
Who is the bro-estrate? It's not Gert.
It's not. And I find myself a bit confused by the rules of the story, in that for the rest of the wacky alien family, they've been able to punch through the alien personality over the human personality pretty quickly. So the notion of this sleeper agent, from a tension point of view, I appreciate not knowing. It's something that makes me, you know, excited to watch the next episode as we move things forward. But I'm just not sure. I mean, maybe if I was going to choose somebody, maybe Alex, just because he does tend to be, you know, the least power, the least tech, the least among them. It would be fun to have Renzi Feliz be able to play kind of the opposite of that, in the big grand, you know, alien dude bro with powers. But time will tell.
Well, given that in the comics he is the traitor at one point, I think you might be onto something. It didn't even occur to me that it would allow this non-powered character to finally get a little bit of a taste with that. So you might be on to something, Matt.
Well, and I always come back to looking at a show, you know, it has story pressure inside it, and then it has real life production pressure on the outside of the story. And just this thought of, they must have been confident that this would likely be the last season. So at what point do you sit and go, hey, do you remember when we cast Renzi, when we first met him all the way back in, you know, when we first, you know, did a casting meeting in 2016, da da da, and he hasn't had much opportunity to stretch this acting muscle or this type of performance. So, you know, to make him kind of the crazy one, the crazy alien dude bro, as I said, would be a lot of fun. I'll just mention tangentially, also very fun in the presentation was the use of the kind of cinematic, you know, 2.31 or whatever, widescreen, full widescreen for when we are in the construct. I think they're doing something different too, just in terms of cinematography or lenses or something. It kind of looked more movie, and not just because of the letterbox, but the final result was it really gave that visual pop when they're in this artificial world. And, you know, just as a basic viewer, I appreciated it in terms of just being clear where we're at and the nature of the reality and whatnot. And then on top of it, it was just beautiful to look at.
We've never known the magistrate to not be scaly. And now to have it be Victor Stein instead of Jonah, and to create again a story clock, you need to absorb somebody. We had the checking of the pod, albeit in Chase's algorithm at the beginning of this episode. So it sets up, okay, hey, kids get drained, aliens absorb. This is still a thing central within this show, and creating a need for it again.
Yeah, and I mean, speaking of that need, I felt like there was a story urgency throughout this episode that, for me, you know, I didn't like grossly dislike season two, but I felt that, you know, as is oftentimes the case with Marvel TV, it was maybe 10 episodes that had been stretched to 13. There were some tangents that maybe didn't land with me as much as some of the other ones. I felt like this was just a grand restatement of the disparate characters, the crazy situations that they're in, the far out stuff involving, you know, space and aliens and alien shapeshifters and things like that. But it felt so at home.
The Chekhov's AWOL and his boys, Matt, something I didn't expect we'd see return. But, you know, under the notion of Chekhov's gun, that they're here, that they're alive, and that they can be used again. Obviously, they'll be freed at some point.
One would certainly hope so. And, you know, not even a theory here, just I don't know to what degree AWOL and his crew returning can kind of somehow maybe help the situation of Catherine and Jeffrey. I mean, I know Catherine did do the deed, but Jeffrey, you know, now paying the price and whatnot. Again, I think, you know, a theme of my theories for the season will be with the show, with the production, likely knowing that they had to give a satisfying wrap up at the end of the season, which indeed might be the end of the series. What seeds are there to give us some kind of, you know, semi-permanent resolution?
I have to call a little bit of story baloney on Zavin not being able to identify the son if he is indeed in one of the runaways.
I'm inclined to agree. I'll just respond by saying I feel like there still is enough mystery to her as a character, or at the very least mystery kind of from my memories from concluding season two, lo, these 11 months ago, to getting to this point now. I feel like it's just hazy enough to say, hey, show, if you want to get away with some alien story hand waving, I'm open to that.
And then last one for me, Matt, the ability for Gert to essentially inhabit old Lace and drive it around, though she puts her right into a tree and knocks herself out, creates a whole new avenue of possibility for this season.
Yeah, it puts a weapon in the hands of the runaways, specifically Gert. And then we also have built in the Green Lantern-esque yellow flaw in terms of, you know, Gert does not be able to, or Gert cannot control the dinosaur 100%. And if the dinosaur is hurt, Gert is hurt. And it's kind of enough there where it's not kind of this game leveling, you know, Jurassic World, we will train the raptors to kill, kill, kill. It's just, it's enough of the story muscle being flexed in order to give us some extra juicy stuff in the episodes ahead. With that, Pete, hearing some feedback, let's tune in to our pal, Fred from the Netherlands.
Hello, Matt and Pete. This is Fred from the Netherlands with some feedback for Marvel's Runaways Season 3, Episode 1. Just a short feedback because I saw the episode only once. In the beginning, it was quite confusing with all these dreams. Which dream is whose? Chase kissing Gert awake is, of course, a little bit too Cinderella-like. And I have to say, I forgot a little bit that this is quite a different kind of Marvel if you compare it, for instance, with Agent Carter or Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. or other Marvels like Thor or Captain America, etc. It's still funny, but it's different level. There were quite some nice special effects, especially the special effect of people changing into a flock of birds. Of course I loved Carolina's wedding dress. Who wouldn't? And best role is for Brittany Ishibashi, Tina Minuro, who plays a marvelous adolescent, rebellious teenager in alien form. Little nitpick, I think the change in Stacy from an alien to normal Stacy again in that alley with Molly was happening a little bit too fast. And you really wonder, where did the alien go? Is the alien now suppressed in Stacy? Or is the alien gone? We didn't see something fly away, vaporize, or whatever. Okay, I have to watch this episode probably again, but the deadline is coming up in 45 minutes. So, greetings. All the best. Fred from the Netherlands. Till next time.
Big thanks to Fred, as always, for reaching out. Pete, him mentioning some confusing dreams with a Cinderella touch in the episode. Certainly agree. I wonder to what amount that was intentional on their end to kind of have people a bit confused. It's always a double-edged sword, of course, to have your audience confused. I also very much agree with Fred's statement that the special effects in this episode were on point. A little bit of a reminder that Marvel TV, though in its waning days, certainly knows how to put on one heck of a show.
Definitely some thought-provoking thoughts from Fred.
Pete, this entire season of Runaways that we're doing, interspersed with The Mandalorian, Star Trek Short Treks, Star Wars Rise of Skywalker, Watchmen, etc., it could not be done without the people who support us on patreon.com/fantasticgeek.
Everybody who contributes gets access to exclusive podcast content, and we are so thankful, particularly at this time of year when the bill comes due. So get yourself over to patreon.com/fantasticgeek and check over the perks. Only takes $1 a month, a mere quarter a week, to get yourself in the door and help us out. Can't contribute? Well, it's always free to head over to Apple Podcasts and to leave a rating or even a review for the Runaways Rundown podcast by Fantastic Geek.
Also, Free Pete is talking to you on Twitter. How can people do so?
You can find me on Twitter at Peter, PIETERJKETELAAR, 10,937 followers. Can't be wrong.
And while I am personally on Twitter as Looking Back Lost, do be in touch with the podcast. Comment on FantasticGeek.com. Check us out on Twitter, Instagram, Gmail, where we are Fantastic Geek as well. But wait, Pete, there's more.
Facebook.com/FantasticGeek with the PH, all one word, like it today.
So for those listening on the Pop Culture Podcast feed, we have a Star Trek Star Wars double bill hitting your feed tomorrow. And then back on Sunday for Runaways, regardless of how you listen, Pop Culture Podcast feed, Runaways Rundown feed. With that, Pete, first one's in the books. I will say adios to all listeners and give you the final word.
I believe this is where humans extend arms around each other. So far, I guess that's why I didn't notice that police car. We're doing 90 in my mom's new Porsche. And to make this long story short, when the cop pulled me over, I